With oil companies so flush with cash, there is another big-ticket merger in the fossil fuel industry this morning. I'm David Brancaccio. There's news this morning. Chevron wants to buy another oil company, New York-based Hess, for $53 billion worth of stock. Here's Marketplace's Henry Epp.
Hess started as a small oil delivery company in New Jersey in the 1930s. Now it has oil drilling operations around the globe, including in South America and in the Bakken Formation in North Dakota. Adding Hess's operations to its portfolio will allow Chevron to grow its oil production and cash flow over the next 5 years, according to a joint press release from the two companies. This follows a move earlier this month by Chevron's rival ExxonMobil, which announced the acquisition of another U.S. oil company, Pioneer Natural Resources. That merger will significantly expand Exxon's oil drilling capacity. Both Chevron and Exxon have said they'll cut their carbon emissions in the coming years as oil and gas use continues to fuel the climate crisis. But these acquisitions signal that both companies intend to keep extracting carbon-intensive fuels for the foreseeable future. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
There were 370 applicants, but there's news today, 31 places across the U.S. have won the distinction of getting federal money to become regional technology hubs. The Biden administration has $500 million to distribute to these winners so that more tech jobs are centered beyond traditional hotspots like Seattle, Silicon Valley, and the Boston area. These new hubs will stretch from Maine through Nevada, Florida through Oregon. Recently, the administration also identified a list of hydrogen fuel innovation hubs. This weekend, the first two groups of trucks carrying humanitarian aid into Gaza crossed over the border from Egypt. These shipments do not include much-needed gasoline and diesel. The U.S. has pledged to send $100 million in humanitarian aid to Gaza and the West Bank. More than three-quarters of households in Gaza receive some form of aid via the U.N. or other international organizations. Now, let's better understand mechanisms for its distribution by turning to Topher McDougall, a professor of economic development at the Joan B. Kroc School of Peace Studies at the University of San Diego. He also directs a graduate program in humanitarian action there. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
When a limited convoy of international aid moves into Gaza, who and what guides its distribution to the intended destination? I mean, a lot of that's got to be UN.
In the past, USAID has administered the lion's share of U.S. assistance to Gaza, and I imagine that they will continue to do so, but they work in conjunction with local partners, and major local partner is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, or UNRWA. That agency continues to serve, in effect, as a kind of parallel, but obviously unelected government for Palestinian refugees. And since it's funded and administered by the UN, it's seen as sort of a third party.
Now, UNRWA has been accused of getting too cozy with Hamas. There's a moment some years ago when U.S. aid to Gaza gets reduced because school textbooks the UN agency was handing out talked about jihad. The agency says it doesn't get to pick the books or the curriculum and that it has to work with local authorities, which is typically Hamas.
Yes, this is a classic problem in humanitarian aid and humanitarian distribution. Oftentimes, the civilians that humanitarians are looking to help are under the control of a government which may be distasteful, may be, in this case, involved in perpetrating violence. And you work with what you have, and you have to make ethical decisions based on the balance of factors. These are the sorts of stories that have come to light all over the humanitarian world.
Back in 2014, another Israel-Hamas war, you saw when you were working with the World Bank some of the difficulties of getting humanitarian aid in?
Yes. Part of the issue is that simple cash transfers are really not helpful in this particular case. In many other economies, cash transfers can stimulate local production. They can improve allocative efficiency, right? People will spend the money in ways that will address their idiosyncratic needs and desires. But in an economy that is so cut off, such as Gaza's, it's so isolated, dumping currency into a market that can't produce what's demanded is just a recipe for massive inflation. And in that case, that would simply be compounding what's already really an unbearable situation.
So in the near term, I'm talking days, Professor, what would you like to see prioritized?
Humanitarian assistance is the first priority. That will include food, it will include water, it will include shelter, and it will include medical supplies and healthcare workers as well. In the midterm, I would like to see utilities back online. The caveat to all of that is that much of this is not as needed if we can prevent the bombing in the first place. So if we can halt the airstrikes and call for a humanitarian pause, that would be the best thing. Unfortunately, the United States vetoed that when it came before the Security Council just on the 18th.
Topher McDougall is a professor of economic development at the Joan B. Kroc School of Peace Studies at the University of San Diego. He's also a former World Bank consultant. Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time, David.
Today, we also get context on U.S. aid to Israel, including President Biden's current $14 billion request to Congress, an ask held up by the lack of a Speaker of the House. This is in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed if you miss it on the air with us today. I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.